All right, welcome to the deep dive. We're diving into some really interesting stuff today. You guys sent in some fascinating material on NAACP v. Button. It's the, big 1963 Supreme Court case. And today we're really going to like dig into those sources so we can try to really understand it, this landmark decision, and why it keeps being so relevant, especially for you all, future legal eagles.
Yeah, absolutely. And based on what you sent, looks like our mission today is going to be unpacking how the Supreme Court looked at litigation, in the context of all this NAACP activity, not just some legal tactic, but as like a fundamental form of political expression, all protected under the First Amendment. We'll also look at what this means for states trying to regulate legal solicitation, according to these documents,
Right.
anyway.
So let's like get into the backstory, like what was the NAACP even doing in Virginia that, led to this huge legal battle, at least according to these articles?
Well, your sources go into detail about how back in the 1950s, the NAACP in Virginia was, really deep in the fight against racial discrimination, especially in public schools. And their approach, you can see it right here, it was very proactive. They weren't just waiting for like individual cases to pop up. They were organizing like right in the community, holding these meetings with parents and students who were, directly dealing with segregation.
So they were taking a very like direct approach to initiating these legal challenges.
Exactly. Your sources emphasize that they were like going out and informing people about their legal rights in the context of desegregation. Like they would actually explain all the different legal options and even provide forms to make it easier for people to get represented by NAACP lawyers in potential desegregation lawsuits. It was like a very deliberate effort to use the legal system to try and make some big social change. That's a key point that keeps coming up in a bunch of these articles.
Now, Virginia, they, as these sources show, they hit back with this thing called Chapter 33. What was the like the main point of that law, and how did the state try to use it against the NAACP, based on what you found?
Well, Chapter 33, they passed it in 1956. And basically, it said that organizations couldn't go around soliciting legal business, for cases where they weren't directly involved themselves. And Virginia argued, looking at the NAACP's activities, the meetings, explaining rights, the whole form thing, that all that was basically the prohibited solicitation under this law.
So if we're seeing it from Virginia's side, like these materials suggest, they basically thought the NAACP was just like stirring up lawsuits.
That's exactly the argument they made. They framed it as like unethical solicitation that could lead to, a bunch of pointless lawsuits or undue influence by the organization. Some of your sources highlight this. And this is what led the NAACP, it's detailed right here in these documents, to sue Virginia's attorney general. They wanted the courts to say that Chapter 33 either, just didn't apply to what they were doing or was, straight up unconstitutional.
And the first rulings in the lower courts, your research shows, they sided with the state.
Yeah, that's right. At first, the Virginia court said the law was fine, that it did apply to what the NAACP was doing. And this back and forth, like your sources point out, is what set the stage for the Supreme Court to finally take on the case.
Which brings us to the main legal fight. Based on what you read, what was the big question the Supreme Court had to figure out?
The core legal question, it's laid out pretty clearly in these documents, was whether Virginia's Chapter 33, the way they were using it against the NAACP, violated the First Amendment, freedom of speech, right to associate, all that. And the 14th Amendment, which is about due process under the law. So it was a, a clash between state power and these fundamental constitutional rights.
Okay, let's dig into the majority opinion. Justice Brennan wrote it, right? What were the biggest takeaways there, according to these Supreme Court records?
Okay, so the most groundbreaking thing they said, a big takeaway from these documents, was that the NAACP's efforts, all that litigation, wasn't just about getting legal clients. The court said it was a form of political expression, which is protected by the First Amendment. It was a, huge shift in how they viewed those activities legally.
Political expression through lawsuits.
Yeah.
How'd they justify that? What made it, not just regular legal practice?
Well, they argued, and it's really clear in the opinion you sent, that the NAACP wasn't trying to like make money for themselves or their lawyers. Their goal was to, advance civil rights for African Americans and contribute to a bigger change in society by getting rid of segregation. They saw litigation in this specific context as like a crucial way for a minority group to achieve equality, to really participate in society. Justice Brennan, he famously wrote, it's even quoted in one of your sources, in the context of NAACP objectives, litigation is not a technique of resolving private differences. It is a means for achieving the lawful objectives of equality of treatment by all government. It is thus a form of political expression. It's a really powerful way to look at it.
Yeah, that's a powerful statement. Now, the court knew that Virginia had a reason to regulate the legal profession. How did they balance that with the NAACP's rights in this case?
They acknowledged that states have a real interest in regulating lawyers to prevent things like, you know, conflicts of interest or unethical behavior. That comes up in several of your articles. But they decided that in this specific situation, Virginia's reason for regulating wasn't enough to justify Chapter 33's limits on the NAACP's First Amendment freedoms. Basically, they said that even though states usually have this valid interest, they can't use it to just shut down fundamental rights, especially when those rights are being used to fight something as serious as racial discrimination.
And this is where one of the articles mentioned the overbreadth doctrine. What is that exactly? And why did the court have a problem with Chapter 33 because of it?
Right. So the overbreadth doctrine, your source explains it. It basically means that a law can be thrown out if it's worded so broadly that it could end up prohibiting stuff that's actually protected by the Constitution, not just the bad stuff it's trying to stop. The court said Chapter 33 was overbroad because it was vague. Like, the wording could have scared any group from trying to, you know, push for their interests through legal action, even if their motives were totally about getting justice, not making money. Imagine, like, a law that just broadly bans any organized talk about potential legal action. It might sound like it's trying to stop unethical stuff, but it could also stop a tenants' union from telling their members about their rights after a fire and suggesting they get a lawyer. See, the law becomes a really blunt instrument.
So it was too vague, could have shut down protected speech, not just bad behavior. Now, the court also went out of its way to say the NAACP wasn't doing anything like barratry and champerty. This might be new terms for some of you. Can you explain those and why the court made that distinction?
Sure. Barratry, that's basically when someone keeps scoring up fights and lawsuits just to cause trouble. Champerty is like an agreement where someone who has nothing to do with the lawsuit says they'll pay for it just to get a cut of the money if they win. These rules are meant to stop people from filing lawsuits just to make money. The court said, and this is really important in the majority opinion, that the NAACP wasn't doing that at all. They weren't trying to get rich or abuse the legal system. The court even said, and this is a quote from one of your materials, "Resort of the courts to seek vindication of constitutional rights is a different matter from the oppressive, malicious, or avaricious use of the legal process for purely private gain." The NAACP was fighting for constitutional justice, not for their own pockets. Think of barratry and champerty like. Somebody's always starting drama just to get paid in legal fees, or someone who wants a piece of a lawsuit they didn't start. The NAACP's goals were totally different.
That difference seems really important for the court's decision. Now, what about the concurring opinions? Justice Douglas, these sources point out he had some strong feelings about Chapter 33, didn't he?
He did. Justice Douglas, in his concurring opinion, took it even further. He argued, and this is a big point he makes, that Chapter 33 wasn't just some neutral regulation. He thought Virginia passed it specifically to punish the NAACP for pushing desegregation after Brown v. Board of Education. They were trying to stop the civil rights movement from using the courts.
So he saw it as retaliation. Adds another layer to the story, you know, all that resistance to desegregation back then. What about Justice White's concurrence? What did he think?
He agreed with the majority that states can regulate non-lawyers who are controlling litigation, you know, to prevent abuses. He stresses that in his concurrence. But he didn't like how broad Virginia's ban was in Chapter 33. He thought they could have done it in a narrower way that didn't mess with the NAACP's First Amendment rights so much.
And then, of course, there was the dissent. What was Justice Harlan's main point based on these documents?
Justice Harlan, along with Justices Clark and Stewart, they disagreed strongly. His dissent was all about states' rights. He believed they had the power to decide what's ethical for lawyers within their borders. He said the NAACP was definitely doing unethical solicitation and that the state had every right to stop it, to keep the legal profession, you know, respectable. He didn't see the NAACP doing anything different from other types of bad legal solicitation.
So we can see from all these different opinions, there was a real clash about how much power states have and how to protect these basic freedoms. Looking back, why is NAACP v. Button still so important today? What does it mean for you as future lawyers?
NAACP v. Button had a huge, long-lasting impact on the law. It made it clear that when you use litigation to push for social and political change, especially for civil rights, that's protected speech under the First Amendment. It was a major win for the civil rights movement, and it laid the groundwork for other groups to advocate for their rights. It's a foundational case for understanding how constitutional rights work in the legal world.
And it really opened the door for impact litigation.
Yeah, absolutely. This decision was key in making impact litigation a powerful and legitimate tool. Marginalized groups, public interest organizations, they can use it to try and change society and the law. By saying that litigation in this context is protected expression, the court basically gave the green light to using lawsuits to challenge injustice. You can see its influence today in how courts look at rules targeting groups like the ACLU or environmental groups who use litigation all the time to advocate.
Last thing, we often hear about the compelling state interest test. The court didn't actually lay that out in this case, but was the idea there in their reasoning based on these materials?
Yeah, even though they didn't formally define a compelling state interest test the way we use it now, the core idea is there in their reasoning. You can see it in their balancing act. They basically said that states can only restrict First Amendment rights if they have a really, really good reason, a compelling state interest. And even then, any rules they make have to be very specific so they don't step on those basic rights more than they have to. This case was a big step in developing that standard for laws that affect free speech, and it's something you'll need to understand as you move forward.
So for all you future lawyers out there, what's the big takeaway from our deep dive into NAACP v. Button?
The main thing to remember is that this case set a strong precedent for protecting advocacy through lawsuits under the First Amendment. It shows that when you use legal action to fight for social justice and defend constitutional rights, it deserves protection from overly broad state regulations that try to limit legal solicitation. It's a fundamental principle that will shape how you think about law and advocacy.
That's crucial for anyone interested in public interest law or civil rights, really for any area of law where constitutional rights are at stake. So here's something to think about, building on what we've discussed. How do these principles from Button still affect how advocacy groups work today? Think about that tension between regulating lawyers and protecting free speech and association for people who want to use the legal system to make a difference. What are some examples of this tension playing out today? It's something to really consider as you continue your legal studies. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.